Radio Patapoe komt naar jou toe met onze uitzendkracht. De sterke zender zorgt voor werkgelegenheid. Radio Patapoe collecteert ook voor de kinderbestrijding. Geef gul. Uw geld komt heel goed terecht. Patapoe doet het niet alleen, maar belooft het ook. Onze uitzendingen zijn tevens heilig verklaard. Vraag het de paus. Prins Alexander zag ik laatst met een ander. Ik zweer het u.
En dat is beloofd. Sammen her og nu. Og hvis det ikke kunne leve hver for sig,
simpelthen, altså nu er vi blevet, altså, det her var fantastisk, altså David, og det, også, nu blev vi, det blev folkekært nu.
Men jeg synes altså også, det er lidt svært, fordi jeg blev ved med at høre den her sang, som sådan et anthem for ham og hans nye boogie cup.
Vi kan slet ikke leve mere for sig.
Ham, der sidder med det der cup, og sådan og ikke har nogen andre, der kigger ind i pejsen. Det var ligesom sådan en hel musikvideo, der udspillede sig fra mit indre øje. Og ja, tillykke David, og også tillykke til Rasmus fra Amager, og også tillykke til Isan.
Og tak til jer alle sammen.
Og tak til alle, der har sendt.
Og keep them coming.
Ja.
Jeg har faktisk lige fået
at vide... Det er svært at følge efter.
Jamen det er det. Jeg har faktisk lige fået at vide, den der hvad sangen hedder, som jeg ikke kunne...
Wow.
Ja.
Hvad var det for en?
Masterchef.
Masterchef.
Kender du ikke den?
Nej.
Det er Pay featuring Sapsi.
Hapski?
Hapski. Nå ja, Hapski.
Lad os
og
høre det.
Og guitarspillet, apropos.
Jeg elsker Hapski. Fedt.
Penge, det er must. Masterchef saucer. 5 år siden er lagt skyldestad i kloster. Først er mig første, for han er en bomser. Du ved, hvem du er, hvis det bliver mellem os. Penge, det er must. Masterchef saucer. 5 år siden er lagt skyldestad i kloster.
efter, for jeg er kongelig. Jeg er ikke sur, jeg er dem udlig ligesom Henri. De kopier for dig, jealousy og envy. De kopier for dig, jealousy og envy. De tomme indeni, er de empty. Prøv lige at se, hvad vi endte i. Selv min største enemy ved at selfie. Jeg er på min egen ting. Fokuserer på forretning, og jeg tager min egen retning. Med min brødre ved at dele. Holder mig til cykelejen, for at falske mennesker over det hele. Over det hele. Det er okay, så længe vi får vores del. De vil gerne, men de når sig ikke helt. Og hus og bror, sådan er det.
Bing, det er must, must chef salsa. 5 år siden, eller ikke skylder stadig klasser. Første med første, for han er en bomser. Du ved, hvem du er, hvis det bliver mellem os. Bing, det er must, must chef salsa. 5 år siden, eller ikke skylder stadig klasser. Første med første, for han er en bomser. Du ved, hvem du er, hvis det bliver mellem os. Nu er det just eat, for vi er hungry. Halvdelen af blokken, det blev zombies. Uforglædt is, ligesom Bambi. Når du rykker bag, gør det ordentligt. Første med første, for han er en bomser. Du ved, hvem du er, hvis det bliver mellem os. Bing, det er must, must chef salsa. 5 år siden, jeg lagde skylder stadig kloster. Første med første, for han er en bomser. Du ved, hvem du er, hvis det bliver mellem os.
Jeg har ro inde i dig, en god energi. Loyal til mit ryste, for jeg er kongelig. Jeg er ikke sur, jeg er dem udlig ligesom Henri. De kopier for dig, jealousy og envy. Jeg har ro inde i dig, en god energi. Loyal til mit ryste, for jeg er kongelig. Jeg er ikke sur, jeg er dem udlig ligesom Henri. De kopier for dig, jealousy og envy.
Dejligt. Jeg elsker Havski. Jeg havde ikke hørt det her nummer før.
Har du ikke det?
Nej.
Jamen, jeg tror, det er det nummer, jeg har hørt allermest i 2020. Penge, det er den måske. Ja, du lytter til Bushy. Ja. Yes.
Fedt. Og ja, vi giver selvfølgelig vinderne af konkurrencen besked også efter programmet her, så de får deres kopper.
Retmæssigt.
Og hvad gør vi så?
Jamen, hvad har du lyst til at høre, Agnete? Jeg synes, jeg har... Ej, vi har faktisk delt. Det er delt som.
Jeg har... Jeg kan lige rapportere fra for nogle programmer siden. Spillede vi noget koramusik af Dauda Yobate. Og jeg blev i tvivl om en masse ting, som jeg lige lovede at følge op på. Og det har jeg gjort. Og fået nogle svar fra Dauda på skrift.
Call and response.
Ja. Og dem vil jeg lige... Jeg vil lige give mig selv lidt ret. Og også rette mig selv lidt. Fordi...
sprog.
Ja. Den kom lige til mig.
Ja, men sprogblomsterne, de skyder
sådan,
ud.
Sådan er jeg bare.
Færd forårets komme.
Okay. Det første er en rettelse. Mm-hmm. Fordi jeg har misforstået, hvornår og hvordan Dauda lærte at spille kora. Han har lyttet til koramusik hele sit liv. Og er ligesom vokset op, omringet af koramusik, men begyndte ikke at spille kora, før han kom til Danmark. Og så begyndte han at spille og øve sig, eksperimentere og blive bedre og bedre. Men det, jeg havde ret i, var, at koraen er et vigtigt element i den sådan, verbale mandinka-tradition, inklusiv at dele historien om mandinka-folket og vigtige sådan, karakterer fra Mande Empire Gambia. Og Sona Yobate, som vi talte om, der ligesom
var
en forbindelse.
Var det samme Jensen.
Sona er Daudas niese.
Nej, hvor fantastisk!
Ja, så der var lige lidt opklaring der, fra lidt opfølgning. Og det var bare altid dejligt, at man kan blive klogere, lære noget mere.
Og se på det. Jeg var lige på toilettet. Jeg ved ikke, hvorfor det er altid mig, der tænker, at jeg kan sige det her. men jeg var på toilettet. Og så tænkte jeg over, altså, der er ikke nok med David. Så også lige Gusse B. i dag, og Thomas Helmi, og Anne Linnet, og Dauda. Altså, vi bliver bare så beriget af alt, og også Masterchef lige nu. Altså, vi bliver bare så beriget af, at folk, de kontakter os og kommer med indslag, og kommer med idéer, og kommer med musikinspiration. Det er bare sådan, en kæmpe blessing. Og vi vil bare gerne give tilbage til jer, der lytter med. Og prøv bare at spille noget fed musik. Og
jeg tænkte på, om vi skulle høre en af Sonas numre, faktisk. Ja. Altså, Sona er jo bare til. Ja. For lige at sådan have lidt mere kora med i den her opfølgning.
Hvad har du lyst til at høre?
Jeg tænkte på et nummer, der hedder Yarabi, som man kan finde på YouTube. Okay. Hvor hun også spiller med et ensemble, som jeg synes er ret flot.
Tonight I'm on a na 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 yeah. Tonight I'm on a na na na.
Det var Sona Jobates nummer Yarabi.
Så amazing.
Ja. Yeah. Det er bare dejligt.
Det er bare dejligt.
Så tusind tak, Dagda, for at hjælpe med opklaring, og tusind tak for musikken.
Opklaringer, forklaring og forklarelse og belæring.
Ja, simpelthen. Vi har hørt ret meget sådan lokal musik.
Ja.
Det synes jeg er rigtig dejligt. Jeg har også noget mere, faktisk.
Det er jo bare så
galt. Nå ja, men noget, der ligesom udspringer fra noget, der er tæt på.
Ja.
På en måde.
Ja.
Jeg har også noget mere sådan lokalt. Skal vi høre det?
Ja.
Det er en forpremiere på et album, som udkommer på næste fredag, den 4. februar.
Okay.
Som jeg er med til at udgive gennem Esho. Som bare er et stykke af den her udgivelse, som jeg har hørt rigtig meget de sidste par dage. Som er fra Puyan Sanati.
Som jo også er en, der har sendt...
Som faktisk også, ja, var in the running.
Talebesked. Ja. Running towards becoming.
Ja, men han vandt altså ikke. Du vandt ikke den her gang, Puyan. Men så spiller vi i stedet måske noget af din musik.
så vinder vi. Ja.
Men har du lyst til at høre det?
Ja.
Okay, det er et album, som hedder Parallel Process. Som er... Puyans første sådan skridt ind i noget mere. Han plejer egentlig at producere mere sådan klubmusik og lave meget sådan klub, ja, mere sådan gridded, mere digital. Men det her, det er ligesom et skridt ind i en sådan lidt mere abstrakt akustisk verden, som jeg synes klarer enormt godt. Ja, hvor alle lydkilderne ligesom, altså han forklarer det lidt som en måde at udfordre sig selv på, hvor hvis man altså altid at gøre det kontrastfyldt. Altså hvis man plejer at lave musik, som er gridded, så skal man lave noget, som er uden beat. Hvis man plejer at lave musik fra digitale lydkilder, så skal man lave noget, hvor lydkilderne har været akustiske.
Proces,
præcis. Parallel process. Og det er der kommet noget smuk musik ud af. Så jeg tænkte, inden albumet kommer, kan man her få en eksklusiv...
Eksklusiv boogie. First time on air.
Horizon fra Puyan Sanati.
Bushi. så behageligt at være i. Det er også lige mange forskellige moods i dag. Mm. Men det fik mig til at tænke på, hvad hedder det? Burial har udgivet en ny EP, som hedder Antidawn, som er virkelig anbefalelsesværdig.
Okay, den har jeg ikke hørt endnu.
Nej, men det skal du gøre faktisk flere gange. Det er bare sådan, jeg havde kommet til at sætte den på, hvor jeg havde gået ned med vasketøj og kom tilbage igen, og så var det så lidt som om, der var en gyserfilm i gang. Men hvis man, men hvis man starter, ja, hvor man selv er i rummet, mm, så er det rigtig, rigtig rart.
Ja, ja, ja. Så, ej, skal vi høre det?
Ja, det som er nummer, det hedder. Ja, som det sidste. Og altså, tak for i dag, mand.
Tusind tak for i dag. Hold da om. Hvad skete der lige?
Jeg har ingen idé. Jeg tror, det er det, som det her afsnit hedder. Hvad skete der lige?
Tusind tak for i dag, og tak til alle jer, der har sendt lytterønsker igen. Vi glæder os til at høre meget mere fra jer.
Og tak til David.
Tak til David, og tak til dig, der lytter med. Vi lyttes ved i næste uge.
Yes, og her kommer New Love med Burial.
Since I was young, I needed just to get away. Free. Beyond everything.
Great name, I
am a dreadlock.
Go on, sing it, make a man hear, no?
up and come out of my studio, boy.
I am a dreadlock.
You mean a deadlock?
I am a dreadlock.
You really be a fierce true. How come you's a ballad man and you sing dread song?
I am a dreadlock.
Where you be at?
In the bathroom, sir.
I am a dreadlock.
Shrat with ball chin. You really determined.
I am a dreadlock.
Move ya. What time man would like to overstand? How come a ballad man a sing dread song?
I am a dreadlock.
But way, move ya.
I am a dreadlock. I am a dreadlock.
I say shut up and come out of my studio, boy.
I am a dreadlock.
You mean a deadlock?
I am a dreadlock.
You really be a fierce true. How come he's a ballad man and you sing dread song?
I am a dreadlock.
You really determined ball chain. Yes, I
am a dreadlock.
But way.
I am a dreadlock.
You are capitalized when the dreadlock is in.
I'm on the item.
Yes, I
am a dreadlock.
Trotway, ball chin. You really determined. Backway.
I am a dreadlock.
Move ya.
I'm on the stand.
Yes,
I am a dreadlock.
I say shut up. Yes, I.
I am a dreadlock.
You man really determined. You yes, really be a fierce.
Yes, I
am a dreadlock.
Trot way.
Gregor's serious injury, from which he suffered for over a month, since no one had the nerve to remove the apple, it stayed lodged in his flesh as a visible memento. Apparently reminded even the father that Gregor, despite his now dismal and disgusting shape, was a member of the family and couldn't be treated like an enemy. Instead, familial obligations dictated that they swallow their repulsion and endure, simply endure. Now, Gregor's injury may have cost him some mobility, no doubt for good, impelling him to take long, long minutes to shuffle across his room like an old war invalid. There was no question of his creeping up the walls. Still, this worsening of his condition was, to his mind, more than made up for by the fact that every evening the parlor door, which he would watch sharply for 1 or 2 hours in advance, was opened, so that he, lying in the darkness of his room and invisible from the parlor, was allowed to see the entire family at the illuminated table, and, by general consent, as it were, listen to their talks. Rather, that is, than eavesdropping as before. Of course, these were no longer the lively exchanges of earlier days, which Gregor had always somewhat wistfully mused about in the tiny hotel rooms whenever he had wearily collapsed into the damp bedding. Now the evenings were usually very hushed. The father would doze off in his armchair shortly after supper. The mother and the sister would urge one another to keep still. The mother, hunched way over beneath the light, would be sewing fine lingerie for a fashion boutique. The sister, having found a job as sales girl, was studying shorthand and French every evening in hopes of perhaps eventually obtaining a better position. Sometimes the father would wake up and, as if unaware that he had been sleeping, would say to the mother, "How long you've been sewing again today?" and doze off again while mother and sister smiled wearily at each other. In a kind of obstinacy, the father refused to take off his attendant's uniform at home. And while his robe dangled uselessly on the clothes hook, he would slumber in his chair, fully dressed, as if always on duty and at his superior's beck and call even here. And so, despite all the painstaking efforts of mother and sister, the uniform, which had not been brand new in the first place, grew less and less tidy, and Gregor would often spend entire evenings gazing at this soiled and spotted garment, which shone with its always polished gold buttons, while the old man slept a very uncomfortable and yet peaceful sleep. The instant the clock struck 10, the mother, by speaking softly to the father, tried to awaken him and talk him into going to bed, for, after all, this was no way to get proper sleep, which the father, who had to start work at 6 a.m., badly needed. But with the obstinacy that had gotten hold of him upon his becoming a bank attendant, he would always insist on remaining at the table a bit longer, even though he invariably nodded out and, moreover, could then be coaxed only with the greatest difficulty to trade the chair for the bed. No matter how much the mother and the sister cajoled and gently admonished him, he would shake his head slowly for a quarter of an hour, keeping his eyes shut and refusing to stand up. The mother would tug at his sleeve, whispering honeyed words into his ear, and the sister would leave her homework to help the mother. But none of this had any effect on the father. He would merely sink deeper into his chair. It was only when the women lifted him under his armpits that he would open his eyes, glance to and fro between mother and sister, and say, "What a life! This is my rest in my old days." And supporting himself on the two women, he would ponderously struggle to his feet, as if being the greatest burden on himself, let the two women steer him to the door, wave them off upon arriving, and trudge on unaided, while the mother hastily discarded her sewing and the daughter her pen in order to run after him and continue being helpful. Who in this overworked and exhausted family had time to look after Gregor any more than was absolutely necessary? The household was reduced further. The maid was now dismissed, after all, and a gigantic, bony charwoman with white hair fluttering around her head would come every morning and evening to do the heaviest chores. Everything else was taken care of by the mother, along with her great amount of needlework. It even happened that various items of family jewelry, which mother and sister had once blissfully sported at celebrations and festivities, were now being sold off, as Gregor learned in the evenings from the general discussions of the prices they had obtained. Their greatest persistent complaint, though, was that since they could hit on no way of moving Gregor, they could not give up this apartment, which was much too large for their present circumstances. Gregor, however, realized it was not just their consideration for him that held them back, for they could have easily transported him in a suitable crate with a couple of air holes in it. The main obstacle to the family's relocation was their utter despair and their sense of being struck by a misfortune like no one else among their friends and relatives. Whatever the world demands of poor people, they carried out to an extreme. The father fetched breakfast for the minor bank tellers. The mother sacrificed herself to underwear for strangers. The sister, ordered around by customers, ran back and forth behind the counter. But those were the limits of the family's strength. And the injury in Gregor's back started hurting again whenever mother and sister, having returned from getting the father to bed, ignored their work as they huddled together cheek to cheek. And the mother, pointing toward Gregor's room, now said, "Close that door, Greta," so that Gregor was back in the dark, while the women in the next room mingled their tears or peered dry-eyed at the table. Gregor spent his nights and days almost entirely without sleep. Occasionally, he decided that the next time the door opened, he would take over the family's affairs as in the past. Now, after a long absence, the director and the office manager reappeared in his thoughts, the clerks and the trainees, the dim-witted errand boy, two or three friends from other companies, a chambermaid in a provincial hotel, a dear, fleeting memory, a milliner's cashier whom he had courted earnestly but too slowly. They all reappeared, mingling with strangers or forgotten people. Yet rather than helping him and his family, they were all unapproachable. And he was glad when they dwindled away. At other moments he was in no mood to worry about his family. He was filled with sheer rage at being poorly looked after. And although unable to picture anything that might tempt his appetite, he did try to devise ways of getting into the pantry and, while not hungry, taking what was ultimately his due. No longer paying any heed to what might be a special treat for Gregor, the sister, before hurrying off to work in the morning and after lunch, would use her foot to shove some random food into Gregor's room. Then, in the evening, indifferent as to whether the food had been merely tasted or, most often the case, left entirely untouched, she would sweep it out with a swing of the broom. She would now tidy up the room in the evening, and she couldn't have done it any faster. Grimy streaks lined the walls. Knots of dust and filth littered the floor. In the beginning, when the sister arrived, Gregor would station himself in such particularly offensive corners as if to chide her. But he could have waited there for weeks on end without her making any improvement. She certainly saw the dirt as clearly as he did, but she had simply made up her mind to leave it there. Nevertheless, with a touchiness that, aside from being quite novel for her, had actually seized hold of the entire family, she made sure that this tidying up remained her bailiwick. Once, the mother had subjected Gregor's room to a major cleansing, which had required several buckets of water. The great dampness, of course, made Gregor ill, and afterwards he sprawled on the settee, embittered and immobile. But the mother's punishment was not long in coming. For that evening, the instant the sister noticed the change in Gregor's room, she ran, deeply offended, into the parlor, and even though the mother raised her hands beseechingly, the sister had a crying fit. The father was, naturally, startled out of his armchair, and both parents gaped, at first in helpless astonishment, until they too started in. The father upbraided the mother, on his right, for not leaving the cleaning to the sister, and he yelled at the sister, on his left, warning her that she would never again be allowed to clean Gregor's room. The mother tried to drag the father, who was beside himself with rage, into the bedroom. The sister, quaking with sobs, kept hammering the table with her little fists. And Gregor hissed loudly in his fury, because no one thought of closing his door to shield him from this spectacle and commotion. But even if the sister, exhausted from her work at the shop, was fed up with looking after Gregor as before, by no means did the mother have to step in to keep Gregor from being neglected. For now, the charwoman was here. This old widow who, with the help of her strong bone structure, must have managed to overcome the worst things in her long life, felt no actual repugnance toward Gregor. While not really snooping, she had once happened to open the door to his room, and at the sight of Gregor, who, completely caught off guard, began scrambling every which way even though no one was chasing him, she had halted in astonishment with her hands folded on her abdomen. Since then, She had never failed to quickly open the door a crack every morning and evening and peep in on him. Initially, she would even summon him with phrases that she must have considered friendly, like, "Come on over, you old dung beetle," or "Just look at the old dung beetle." But Gregor refused to respond to such overtures. He stayed motionless in his place as though the door had not been opened. If only they had ordered this charwoman to clean his room daily instead of letting her gratuitously disturb him whenever the mood struck her. Early one morning, when a violent rain, perhaps a sign of the coming spring, was pelting against the window panes, the charwoman launched into her phrases again. Gregor felt so bitterly provoked that he charged toward her as if to attack, albeit slowly and feebly. But the charwoman, undaunted, merely heaved up a chair by the door and stood there with her mouth wide open, obviously intending to close it only when the chair in her hand smashed down into Gregor's back.
"So that's as far as you're going?" she asked when he shifted away, and she calmly returned the chair to the corner.
Gregor was now eating next to nothing. It was only when he happened to pass the food left for him that he would playfully take a morsel into his mouth, keep it in for hours and hours, and then, usually, spit it out again. At first, he thought that his anguish about the condition of his room was what kept him from eating. But he very soon came to terms with those very changes. The family had gotten used to storing things here that could not be put anywhere else. And now there were many such items here, for they had rented out one room of the apartment to three boarders. These earnest gentlemen, all three had full beards, as Gregor once ascertained through the crack of the door, were sticklers for order, not only in their room, but also, since they were lodging here, throughout the apartment, especially the kitchen. They could not endure useless, much less dirty, refuse. Moreover, they had largely brought in their own household goods. For this reason, many of the family's belongings had become superfluous. But while they had no prospects of selling them, they did not want to throw them out either. All these items wound up in Gregor's room, as did the ash bucket and the garbage can from the kitchen. If anything was unusable at the moment, the charwoman, who was always in a mad rush, would simply toss it into Gregor's room. Luckily, he mostly saw only the object in question and the hand that held it. She may have intended to come for these things in her own good time, or dump them all out in one fell swoop, but instead they remained wherever they happened to land, unless Gregor twisted his way through the clutter, making it shift. At first he had no choice, there being nowhere else for him to crawl, but later on it got to be more and more fun, even if, dead tired and mournful after such treks, he would lie unstirring for hours on end. Since the boarders sometimes also ate their